My Muscle Project, welcome back. We are in the studio. We are on home base. First after show back after a long, long trip.
Arduous.
It does look like fun, right? The trip. I'm looking back at the videos. I'm watching it. It was a lot of fun. But there was definitely a level of anxiety that we took on. Are the memory cards empty? Have I transferred the files? Are the batteries charged? Have I forgotten any equipment? When's the next hotel? What's the day look like tomorrow?
Man, it's a tough trip. It's like, you know, you will go, say, we go all the way to like Sacramento. Such a long journey, right? And I'm always like, man, what if we get there? And Mark Bell's like, oh, I just got a cold this morning. Don't want to do it. And you've like spent money on flights and all this shit. And it's like, there's just a lot that can go wrong on a podcasting tour.
Well, it's as easy as, you know, my kid's sick or
the smallest thing today.
Right. And it happens to us all the time.
Yeah.
Like in our normal studio. And really, I mean, if we thought about all the things we discussed, all the things that could have gone wrong, there are a lot.
A lot. If when a podcast is a 2.5-3 hour drive away, which many of them were, you only need one big car accident and the podcast is off.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think the universe wanted this US trip to happen.
Yeah.
Like, it was pretty nuts. The only podcast we had Brad Schoenfeld cancel, which was in New York. And then we didn't actually have a podcast officially lined up with Kalipa, but there was a time slot that could have worked, but his flight got delayed.
He got a 5-hour delay.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're so lucky that we didn't get a 5-hour delay, because the next morning,
yeah,
we were up at 3 and had 2 podcasts in 2 different cities that day.
Yeah. Well, so we did get a delay, right? When we were sitting.
Yeah.
So we had to travel from the East Coast in Philadelphia from the East Coast to the West Coast, over to San Francisco, and then drive from San Francisco to San Jose, which is a 2-hour drive. No,
it was like, an hour drive. We sped, drive. So it was like 40 minutes.
Right. So we needed to make the Mind Pump show at 10:30. At 10, our flight landed at 8:30. So it was going to be tight, because if you think about it, we've got to get our bags, we've got to rent the car, and we've got to drive there. And I already sort of let them know ahead of time, hey guys, just so you know, it's going to be tight. There might be some delays, just sort of preparing for the future. And we go to the airport. What time we get up? 3:30 a.m.
Yeah,
that morning.
We got a shuttle bus at 4.
Yeah, and we got on the bus and we're driving there. And I'm thinking to myself, it's so early that the airport is going to be empty. So first part should be easy. God. It's like busiest I've ever seen in an airport.
Man, quarter past 4.
So,
and the queue was around 3 different corners. Almost a square.
No, but what about before that? United had some issue with their bagging, and the entire thing was backed up because the belt that they load the bag on, you know, once they put the sticker on your bag and they say, you know, here's your boarding pass, have a good flight, they put your bag on a belt and it disappears and somehow ends up on the plane. That belt wasn't working. So they had so many bags piled back behind them, they weren't taking on any more bags. Luckily for us, somehow they yelled our name out, and I think it's because we had the first class ticket book. We got some priority there, and they bagged. Well, they checked our bags in. But then, when we're walking through the security counter to go through the scanners and, you know, put your carry-on through, how long was that line? You reckon we walked that line it's probably a 2-minute walk to the back of that line.
At least. It was probably like 100 meters, 150
meters. Longer than that.
Yeah.
It was long.
Huge.
Like, ridiculous.
People were about a quarter of the way through the line, and they were next to us like, oh my God, when is this line going to end?
Yeah.
I was like, you are not even nearly to the back of the line.
I can't wait to see your face when you're at the end. And luckily we didn't get the 4:30 a.m. shuttle. I think that's one thing that we learned from the last trip, is we gave ourselves somewhere between an extra 45 to an hour.
For every flight.
On every flight, every podcast, we just pushed ourselves to be earlier, and I think it paid off.
Yeah.
It was like us really learning our lessons.
Things really do go wrong on these travels.
We just were more organized.
It's so different, because when you're on a holiday, you forget that you're not on a strict schedule.
Right.
So you're like, oh, we're going to go like visit the Big Ben today at 1.
Right.
You get there at 4, you're like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's so different when you're all of a sudden traveling on this crazy tight schedule, on somebody else's schedule that, you know, you might get there and they're like, hey man, I've got to finish this an hour earlier than I thought.
And so we land on the tarmac. So we're a little bit late because there were such big delays at the airport. We sat on the tarmac before we took off, and they were saying, hey, look, there's been really big delays, so we're going to wait an extra 30 minutes to allow everyone to come through. Shit. Lucky it's a 7-hour flight. They made up the time in the air. We land.
They gunned it in the air.
they go,
they fucking gunned it.
Yeah. They go, guys, look, we've made up the time in the air. We're actually 5 minutes early.
Yeah.
I go, wow, the universe wants us to make this podcast. What else could go wrong? Then we land. and we don't move for like 20 minutes. The flight attendant checks in. Dear passengers, fucking, you know. Unfortunately, the plane before us has snapped off some piece of equipment.
Yeah, it was like, I think the attachment of where you walk in, you know, like the tunnel, they attach to the plane.
Yeah.
They snapped off something when they drove away from that.
But they didn't explain. They just told us, hey, they've snapped some critical piece of equipment. We don't know how long we're going to be here.
We thought that was it.
And then, you know, does that mean, is that a 30-minute delay? Is that a 5-hour delay? They're going to let us off the plane. What's going to go on here? Ended up being a 45-minute delay. And we took a brisk walk through the bagging area. We got the bags. Anyway, ended up being 45 minutes late. I did drive extremely fast, I must say. We ended up being 45 minutes late. Fortunately, the Mind Pump guys weren't on a super tight schedule, so we were able to still fit in the podcast. That podcast aired on Monday, so that is our first podcast from the US trip and potentially one of our best. You guys are going to love that one. It was the only one we didn't get video for because we did it in their studio, and they quite frankly was not... It wasn't set up to work on video. The only way it would work, we only brought two cameras, would be if we had five cameras. Yeah. Which they had, but I just doubt they would have done the video for us. It's like extra effort. So yeah, that was super cool. We got the opportunity to do so many people that we would have never, you know, Raph and I were discussing, you know, after these podcasts, how surreal some of those moments were, you know, sitting across from Mark Bell, sitting across from Chris Bell from the Mind Pump guys and just thinking, like, we're interviewing them right now. Like, it's crazy. And yeah, we couldn't have done it without you guys and your support over the years and just trying to have better conversations, deeper conversations, more impactful conversations. You know, if you've been following the show for a long time, you've seen an evolution. It's not really sets reps tempo as much as it used to be. And it's more like, okay, what are we doing about the wellness epidemic? What are we doing about digital wellness? How are we handling our sleep? You know, what supplements are we taking for cognitive performance? You know, how are you giving yourself a better life? How are you balancing training with kids and work and stress and all that stuff? And because I think these issues are more relevant to most of society, and we still want to get strong, right? We still want to get jacked and tanned 100%. You guys know what to do there, and we want to still help you with that stuff, but there is definitely room for more big picture conversation.
We also got a lot of sympathy for people that travel with work and try and stay in shape.
Oh yeah,
that's hard. We had a full strategy. We talked about it on the show. High protein.
Well, I think we stuck to high hydration.
Yeah, and we did, and we like made a lot of effort. But
protein and water
was
just good.
It's first of all very tough to just like find the time to train when you're traveling and you don't know which gym you're going to be at.
Right.
And your sleep gets super upset when you stay in a different place every single night.
Yeah.
And just the food on offer in America is pretty bad.
It's the taste of food is great, but it's the quality of the whole foods, the nutrients.
A land devoid of nutrients.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a great trip. Plenty of stuff to come up. If you guys have been following the YouTube series of the trip, it's officially finished. 7 parts have gone up, and that documents the entire 14-day trip. So, I basically did a video every 2 days. You guys can see that. And it was one hell of an adventure. There's some previews in there for the episodes, so you can kind of see those as well. And, you know, we just want to thank you guys again for always supporting us. If you guys get value from the show, you know, the best way that you can support us these days is just taking a screenshot of you listening to the episode and just posting on social media and tagging us. As well, you know, that Hazel Gale podcast that we did 2 weeks ago, it's been absolutely nuts. Some of you guys wrote some pretty profound messages and you shared a lot of stuff, and I think this podcast opened up a whole new conversation which potentially we could go into further at some stage, but I hope that it was, you know, I think it came at the right time for a lot of people. And I'm glad that we did that podcast. And yeah, if you guys have more stories about that stuff, or you know, if you're struggling through mental health issues, and you know, don't be afraid to like share them and reach out. And you just never know who's going to come out of the woodworks and support you. And you never know who's going through this stuff, because social media is like, it's just the life you want to portray. It's never the reality of what's going on. So
I would like to get some more guests like Hazel.
Yeah,
it was really good.
Yeah,
there's just so much out there, and maybe aren't that many podcasts on it. But when you get the right mindset, no matter what you're going after, it just changes the game
for sure. Cool. So we got some listener questions for this week. The first one, I'm going to just pull it up, but I don't think it has a name. Let me just check. This might be the name. Yep. D. Hall Bow. D. Hall Bow. Yeah, he asks, so what are some strategies for improving longer time domain workouts, like 20 to 30 minutes? Whilst he feels fairly fit, by most people's standards, he really feels that he falls short on anything that goes over 10 minutes. Intervals or various times better than just sitting on a machine at a steady pace? He'd really like to know.
Awesome. So I'm guessing these are like mixed modal workouts?
I'd assume so. Mm. Yeah. I mean, 10 minutes on the bike is not... it's not much of a workout unless you're really gunning it.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to... I did find these were generally my best workouts, 20 to 30 minutes. And I don't think that overall, spending years doing it... like, I know people can get a lot of benefit out of the monostructural work. However, I don't think it is the biggest bang for your buck in those areas. It's far more just practicing how to do mixed modal workouts in a longer time domain. And so many people are just like, know how to smash it when it's 5 to 8 minutes. And learning how to do mixed modal work and just keep it super aerobic so you can go 20, 25 minutes still moving really well, still having really good transitions and feeling good at the end. Something you got to learn. And I think we did it mostly just through doing mixed modal workouts for a really long time. So not like a 1 hour workout where you go savage for 5 minutes and then just like fucking go around like a snail for the next 55. It's more like, you know, we did so many EMOMs, 2 minutes on, 2 minutes off, 3 minutes on, 1 minute off of mixed modal work where you just learn to still move well, still have good transitions, still have good technique over like a longer period of time. And I do think that there's definitely a physiological element of like aerobic capacity. But for a lot of people, it's just like the skill of being able to do like difficult skills in a longer time domain.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is like probably the standard answer if you were to program for it is to do something much longer than 20 to 30 minutes. If you blow out after 10 minutes, you just don't really have a good aerobic capacity, long aerobic capacity. You just need to do more aerobic work. Like Raph said, it is boring. And it's probably like not the answer you really want to hear. But if you, for whatever reason, if your why is strong enough to improve a 20, 30 minute workout, then you need to be doing time domains of an hour to an hour and a half.
Yep.
Pretty steady. It's boring, but yeah, it works. And then, yeah, like Raph said, the skill of just pacing yourself better in the workout is the next most important thing, is being able to not completely blow it all in 10 minutes. I like to tell people that, and it's an analogy that's been used heaps of times, but you want to fight, you want to get on the bike, and if you've got to go for 30 minutes, why would you ever, you know, if you can't hold the pace that you're holding for 30 minutes, why would you ever go above it? And it's the same approach you just need to take to any workout. Well, think of it as a sprint. You know, if someone's like, hey, that hill in the distance, that's going to take you 30 minutes to run to from here, you wouldn't start sprinting. You can see the hill, it's fucking ages away. You know, if you started sprinting, you'd blow out. And it only takes you so many times. Well, I guess some people are slow learners, but how many times are you going to blow out in the first 5 minutes to realize, hey, I probably should have paced myself? I tell people in the classes, right, when we're coaching them, when I used to coach them, best way to approach this workout is to finish the first round. Say you're doing just like an AMRAP. You're doing rounds of a workout. Best way to approach this is to finish the first round and feel like, oh, man, I should really speed up. And even at the halfway point, you should still feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, because you feel so much better at the start, it's like every single round should be getting exponentially harder. Because if you just stay at the same pace the whole time, every round's getting harder and harder. So you need to like be way within yourself at the start.
Yep.
And then towards the end, be pushing yourself.
You're saying each round is going to be exponentially harder?
Harder. It should feel harder and harder, but your time should be staying very, very similar. So you need to stay way within yourself at the very beginning.
Mm.
To 20 minutes later, have the same time round feel really, really hard. That makes sense. So, if it feels really hard at the beginning, there's absolutely no way you're going to be doing
Is it becoming exponentially harder the whole time, the feeling? Or you feel like it's a more gradual increase in how hard it is? Like, I wouldn't say it gets exponentially harder.
So, I guess how much you need to feel like you're putting out. So, you need to feel like you're staying way, way more within yourself at the beginning than you do at the end.
Yeah.
So, that curve of how hard I need to go at this time, like how fast I feel like I need to be pushing myself, that changes dramatically.
Yeah.
Because your first round is so fresh. You're staying so like crazy within yourself at the beginning.
Right.
And it's obviously the reverse at the end. And the other thing I would mention is just, I do think one thing people always forget is with endurance stuff is, I do think the focus makes a really big difference. I notice people that have like pretty shit focus struggle way more in the long ones. Like, you know, they're like looking around, looking at what other people are doing, and they have just a lot of trouble. And you've probably experienced this yourself. Is sometimes, like, you'll be doing a workout, it's crazy hard, and you'll catch yourself thinking about, like, the weirdest stuff. Like, oh, like, what if I should put more of this in my program, like, long term? You're like, oh, like, I did do a lot of squats in my program. And, like, you're thinking about the stuff during a workout. And I do think in the longer workouts, that stuff really chips away at your times. Because you just, once you lost focus, you've lost everything. So I think finding ways to, like, improve your focus when things are boring and things are longer really improve endurance workouts. And I think those people that are mad at endurance, they genuinely have incredible focus abilities over a long period of time.
Maybe that's why I was never good at endurance workouts. The other thing that I would add to this as well is, like, maybe you're not fueling properly for a longer workout. So most people, if you're generally saying under 10 minutes, I would say you're, if you can last a little bit longer on improper fueling. Like, so as an example, right? If you need to do a one-arm back squat, you're not really going to know the difference unless you're extremely tuned in on your body. If you've fueled better the night before with 100 grams of carbohydrates versus 0 grams of carbohydrates. At the end of the day, if you've had enough caffeine, you can just walk under that bar and give it as much as possible. Now, extrapolate that out to, like, Fran, for example. Fran, you can do Fran, like, in a very poor nutritional state because it's just putting the foot all the way down on the accelerator. You don't really have to tune into how you feel. You just need to know.
Tune into your cortisol.
Yeah, you just got to push as hard as possible for, like, that 2 to 3 minute time zone. Your fueling's not... I mean, everyone will say that the fueling, of course, is super important. And yes, if you feel better, you're going to perform better than if you didn't. But I feel like it matters less because I know there are days where I haven't fueled as well. And in a shorter time domain, I'm like, if I can just floor it, I'll be all right. Whereas that's why endurance athletes are so particular on their gels, on their carbohydrates the night before, because they know that if they don't fuel properly, they're going to reach a certain time in whatever the distance is or in whatever the time domain is, and they're going to sort of feel empty or hit a wall or bonk or whatever they call it.
For sure.
So making sure that you are, firstly, you're going to sweat a lot more in a longer workout. So hydration is absolutely critical. Most people are not adequately hydrated. If you're not pissing clear every day, sorry, every time you piss in the day, then you're not adequately hydrated. So that could be a big reason that you feel like at the 10-minute mark, you also bonk. You know, if you're 1% dehydrated, it's like a 25% decrease in aerobic capacity. It's a, like, 10 to 15% decrease in overall strength. It's like 10%.
It's an increase in injury chance. I don't know the exact percentage, but they have documented that as you dehydrate, like, your chance of just, like, muscle strains go up very quickly.
So that's at 1% dehydration. So that's not even that much. So at, like, 2 and 3%, it's like injury, it's like a high risk of heart attacks, cardiac arrest.
And the interesting thing they've even shown is it's almost, if you start the workout dehydrated, it's pretty much useless trying to hydrate during it.
Yeah.
So, like, top, they've documented this now, like, top marathoners now, like, won't even bother drinking. Like, they'll start the race hydrated and they'll finish the race dehydrated. But hydrating during the race doesn't speed up, like, the very top marathoners.
Right.
They don't even bother. Like, you have to just be hydrated before you begin.
And don't make the mistake of hydrating with cold water. Cold water is not good for you. You just drink room temperature water so you can drink as much of it as possible. Like, you know cold water is not good for you because if you had a glass of ice cold water and a glass of room temperature water, just think about how many ice cold waters you can drink versus how many room temperature waters. Like, it's not even comparable.
You're fucking getting brain freezes and shit.
Yeah. At the time you drink one ice cold water, you could have had 5 regular temperature waters. So it's much better for your body. In fact, I don't even think it's good at all to drink, like, ice cold drinks.
Maybe someone can explain why everywhere in America they're obsessed with ice cold water.
Oh, every time we order ice, water, no ice, please. That's what I have to say.
It's crazy. There's, like, traces of fucking water in my glass. It's just ice.
Yeah.
Just slam full of ice. Yeah. I know, it's some weird American thing.
Yeah, it's too much ice. So avoid the ice, guys. Even avoid the cold water. So those are probably some things to consider why you might not be better at the time domain. What we would advise is just do one or two of them for this next go round before. Because if you do them all at once, you're not going to know, right? So, do one or two of them at a time and see how you feel. Okay, next couple of questions we've got. Not really relevant to health and fitness, but that's what the after show is about. So, we've got thoughts on Eminem's new album. Have you heard it? We didn't like the last one. Didn't even know he had a new album. Haven't listened to it. Sorry, Sean Clarence. I will have to review that probably next week. My concern is that why is he bringing out so many albums so frequently? Is it because he feels like people are just shredding him so much that he needs to come back with them, or he doesn't like the criticism, so he needs to redeem himself? Generally, artists bring out albums this quickly is, I don't know, I feel like it's not a good sign. But it's not on Spotify.
Is he referring to his last album that was like 6 months ago?
I don't know. Kamikaze, 2018. Oh, no, here we go. Homicide.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it's one song. Anyway, I haven't listened to it yet, but we will listen to a review it next week. So, next question is from someone that we met in the US. We did complain a lot about too much cheese. So, Vicky Vasso wants to know how we're recovering from all the cheese that we've eaten. So, cheese is in everything in
America. It is crazy.
And it gives you really bad gas. Like,
yeah.
Seriously bad gas.
100%. My stomach was really, like, halfway through the trip. Probably the turning point was when we got taken out for that really good pizza by Sean from Active Life.
Yeah.
The day after, we had, like, insane amounts of pizza for dinner.
Yeah, with good
anger. Mike from Freak Strength. And that was just the point. My body was like, enough cheese.
Yeah.
And from then fucking out... Man, I don't know. It's just, it does really go to show, like, what your environment is makes such a big difference to how you feel.
Mm.
And the environment in America is just, you need cheese on everything.
Mm.
And you don't.
Yeah, well, even the drinks are so sweet in America. It's like absurd. It's absurd. It's really strange how different the palate is in America versus Australia. So
cheese sauce. Like, what is that? Like a whole bowl of just cheese sauce.
Yes.
Oh, and they're putting on something that already has cheese on.
Yeah. What about the chips? The dip is cheese. Cheese dip. I don't know. I've never had cheese dip before. I just normally get like barbecue sauce or something. But it's funny because we're like in the car and we're driving. And every time someone puts the window down, it's no because you farted.
Yeah.
And it's just going...
By the end, like after all the cheese,
we
basically needed like a sunroof. We needed a fucking sunroof.
We needed a convertible.
Just for the smelly ass bums to like take that wind straight up into the roof.
Yeah, we needed a convertible. Yeah, it was... It's rough.
Yeah.
It's rough.
But so I'm having a bit of a cheese detox.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. Before we get into the Netflix documentary review for this week, we took a couple of products with us on the road. The first one was True Protein. We took their WPI with us. We didn't really take the Post and the other products because it just wasn't that necessary, but their ZMA as well, we took that for some nighttime relaxation, but it's always nice to have really high quality products in a place where you don't really know how good the quality is going to be. And it's pretty obvious that Australian products, or the True Protein in particular, I believe it's a much better product in terms of its quality ingredients and just how the process that it's been made. And that's why you pay a little bit more for this stuff, because it's a little bit more premium. It's mixed a little bit better. The hydrolyzation process makes it absorb better and break down easier in water. So these are the big differences between, you know, that stock standard product that you see across all of America.
Yeah, I mean, particularly with that, I mean, you see enough documentaries on it, but the standards for supplements in America are very different to the standards for supplements in Australia.
Mm.
Like it is much more lax. And it is crazy. If you ever look at the science, and we had an expert on the show talking about it with magnesium, but like ZMA is obviously the best product you can have for your sleep, but the variation between different sources of it is enormous.
Yeah.
And like a good quality one, it's just a completely different thing.
Yeah.
To a local, it's basically no point buying low quality ones.
And the flavors are really good. So we had like the pineapple flavor at the moment. That's delicious. There's like a raspberry and stuff. We're going to try those. But before bed, you want to drink something that's like not disgusting, but not overly sweet. And they hit the nail on the head here.
Yeah. If you're American, you probably think it's not flavored at all.
Yeah, it's not sweet enough.
There is no cheese flavor, but they do now have lemon burst, pineapple, and blood orange. And yeah, it's just, I think everyone likes having something sweet before bed. And this is something that you actually sleep better with.
So trueprotein.com.au, mindmuscle10 when you check out, guys, and that's going to get you 10% off that order. All right, so we reviewed this. We actually don't know if we reviewed this documentary, but it's worth reviewing again if we hadn't.
Well, I'd never seen it before.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know if we reviewed it or not. So, there's been a bit of a shift in the documentaries, or like maybe the exposure that's happened with rock climbing recently. And it seems as though everyone is more into rock climbing.
Hmm.
And as a result, well, they've made two major movies, The Dawn Wall and Free Solo. We reviewed Free Solo, which is Alex Honnold's ascent up a route on El Capitan without a rope.
Yes.
And The Dawn Wall is with Tommy and some other guy.
Oh, yeah, his mate. Get his name, yeah. Tommy Caldwell.
Tommy Caldwell.
And can't see his name. I can't see his friend here.
Michael, maybe? Michael Hernandez. Tommy Caldwell and Michael Hernandez. Anyway, so they ascend up the Dawn Wall, which is essentially what was touted before the movie as the impossible track up El Capitan. So El Capitan's like this big face. It's got all these different routes. This is a part of Yosemite Park?
Yeah, Yosemite.
Yeah, or Yosemite, whatever. Yosemite Valley, I don't know what it's called. And it's called the Dawn Wall because at dawn, so when the sun is rising, the sun hits this track on the wall first. So that's where it gets its name. And essentially, it's so flat and so smooth, and there's not a lot of cracks to it that most people thought it was impossible. So this guy, Tommy Caldwell, is basically the best climber in the world. And he built, like, over a few years, maps out a track along the wall, which most people thought was basically impossible. And how he does that is, like, you climb to the top of the peak and then you rappel down. What's it called?
Belaying?
No, it's called something else.
Going down on the...
When you go down. Anyway, whatever that's called. So he's going down that and he's essentially, like, mapping out the route. So it's like getting in, he's, you know, marking it with chalk, he's marking it with flags, he's drawing it on a map. And he's just trying to build something that's impossible. He's obsessed over it.
It's 2 years of intensive preparation.
It's insane. He absolutely becomes obsessed with this project, you know, like laser-like focus. Imagine spending hours on the wall just trying to figure out a route up it, which most people say that the route doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look at the difficulty, I believe the rating scale, they have like a 1 to 15 rating scale, something like that. And is that 1 to 15 or 1 to 16? And so each section, which is like essentially there's like, I don't know, maybe 10 sections on the whole wall. A section is like you can pause and rest between sections, kind of like how the rules work, I guess. But between those, you can't move to the next section until you've completed another one. And the sections, all the 10 sections, they average like a 15 out of 16 difficulty. And on like other routes on El Capitan, the same face, you know, you might get some 5s and 7s and 8s and 10s and like maybe a 15 in there. This one's like all 15s.
It's crazy.
So it's like
he's basically holding on to nothing the whole time.
Like, I don't even know if I could stick to one part of that face.
No, like, by the way it looks, most people could not even just be on the wall not moving on almost any part of the wall he's on.
It's like insane.
You can't even just be there isometric.
No.
For a second.
No.
He's literally not. Like on a flat wall.
And it's probably not, like, we're going to be careful how we do this because last time Raph spoiled mid-review just spoils it without realizing. But essentially, it is a really, really good documentary. It documents the journey of these two incredible climbers trying to mount essentially what's the most impossible face. They do it with ropes, right? So they're not going to like fall to their death like Alex, but doesn't take away from how difficult.
I think, I don't know exactly the terminology, but they call it a free climb. So they're not like, you know, putting in those like houses where they sleep overnight on the way up the wall. Like, they're not getting any assistance, but if they fall, they will die.
No.
Like there's no assistance on the way up.
They can't die.
Yeah, exactly. So they won't die.
Yeah, yeah.
But they call it like a free climb.
Yeah.
I think because I guess they're getting no assistance on the way up. So there's no stopping on the way up. Like on the old one, they could like stop and have a rest and like build a little hut or whatever.
What old one?
On the first one we reviewed, how like, you know, the first time they climbed El Capitan took them like months.
Right. Oh, you're talking about different. You're talking about Valley Uprising.
Valley Uprising.
Yeah.
So they get zero. They get a zero assistance to get up the top of this mountain. So they still call it a free climb. But they just, like, have a rope, so if they fall, like, they don't fall all the way to the bottom.
Yeah, they're tied in. They tie themselves into an anchor probably every, like, 10 meters.
Yeah.
So the furthest that they'll fall is essentially, like, 9 meters with a rope. So it's for me, it was exceptionally better than Free Solo. I would almost say that they're incomparable in terms of how engaging the movies are, how emotionally driven they are. For me, Free Solo was like pretty average. So I watched, I think we said this in the review, but I already watched The Dawn Wall before Free Solo, expecting Free Solo to be better, and it was significantly worse. There's something about the whole story, and I won't spoil it, but there is a much deeper story to this entire thing than just this wall. The wall is the centerpiece of this guy's entire life, but all the branches that go out, which are the different stories and the different relationships that are involved in Tommy Cobbler's life, you almost can't believe that this guy's lived this life. So it was a while ago when I watched it. I'm watching the cinemas, but I'm giving this one a 4.5 out of 5. It's nice. One of the best documentaries I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best things on Netflix. I watched it on the plane, just on my phone. Exactly agree. Like, I just feel like it's such, just like so epic seeing him get so involved in one wall and like so pure to go up the wall. Whereas in Alex's film, it just was a bit like, oh man, like I seriously hope this guy doesn't die. And it's like, should he even be doing this in the first place? It just was just like, this is sick. Like one of the greatest feats or whatever someone's trying to do. So I'll probably give it a 4. I think films are never as good when you're half asleep on your phone. So maybe didn't make it quite as good. But I do honestly, I think it's easily the best rock climbing film I've ever seen.
Shit's on Free Solo.
If I wasn't so fat, I'd probably get into rock climbing myself after watching it.
Dude, your ass would stick so far off the wall. Like,
don't think I'm built for it. And but it's sick.
Yeah, sick documentary.
So 4.5 and 4.
Dawn Wall. That's it from us this week, guys. Before we leave you, remember that if you are interested in online coaching, you go to truecoach.co/MMP. And, you know, you can communicate with your coach. Your coach can communicate with you. Our clients use it with their coaches at Creature Fitness. They basically program for stuff, extras, injury work, rehab work, and then maybe just something to, you know, help them get better at muscle ups or maybe a skill they're chasing. It's just a really good place to kind of house it all. You know, it's where you can, you know, put extra videos in. It's where they can communicate with you. It's where you can, you know, use the search function on your phone to kind of see the last time you did back squats or what you got last week. So it's an all-in-one product. It's one of the best pieces of tech that we've got in the exercise game. And so, yeah, go get your free trial at truecoach.co/MMP. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the US trip. Go check it out on YouTube as well. And we'll speak to you next week.
See you.